Welcome to Packet Pushers, the data networking podcast where real people discuss events, technology and work life in the networking industry. During the week, we gather articles, various ideas, and then we get together like engineers do to flap our chins about them. Get comfortable while we get around the virtual workbench and diagnose problems of the network world with humor, wit and maybe even some technical talent. Today's show is a special with Cisco, who have reached out to us to say that they've got things to tell us about the Nexus 1000V. But joining us as co-host this week is Ethan Banks. Ethan, how have you been?
Hey, man, doing good. It's summertime here in New Hampshire, so depending on what part of the planet you're on, that is a little different from where you're at. But for me, it means I get to go outside. It's not cold anymore. It's not, I mean, I go out in the cold and snow and all that stuff, but it has its disadvantages and its limits. You know what I'm saying? So I've got a trip planned to go up in the White Mountains in New Hampshire and do some hiking. I've got a three-day jaunt planned where Friday night I'm heading out. I'm going to stay in a hut that's built up in the mountains by the Appalachian Mountain Club. And Saturday I'm going to take the whole day. I got about a 15-16 mile hike planned that day, and I'll stay at another hut that night up in the mountains. And then I got, and depending on how strong I'm feeling, I might do another 10 or so miles and then head home. So getting away from it all, putting away the technology, getting out in the mountains and seeing what's good out there. So looking forward to that.
Sounds like you've got the denerding wand, you know, like a degaussing wand in the old days around monitors. That's the denerding wand. Yeah,
you got to do that every once in a while. You just absolutely have to let it all go. Although I admit, I will have my high-def camera with me, and I will have my iPhone with me. So I'm not entirely
Ethan, running,
but mostly.
Cheating.
I know.
And that sniggery voice in the background there is Ivan Pepelniak. How are you, Ivan?
Hi, Greg. Not as good as Ethan because it's raining here for the whole week. On the positive side, I pushed through the VMware webinar yesterday.
Yes.
Managed to say a few stupidities for which I have to apologize to the listeners.
Yep.
One of them to do with Nexus 1000V, so we'll fix that today.
Uh-huh.
Apart from that, it was supposedly okay.
All right.
So great relief for me.
Okay. And I'd like to introduce from Cisco Prashant Gandhi, who is the Senior Director of Product Manage for Nexus 1000V at Cisco. Prashant, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Greg.
So first of all, tell us a little bit about your role in Cisco, maybe just to put into perspective your engagement with Nexus.
Absolutely. First, glad to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
Yep. No, it's a pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
I am responsible for product management of the Nexus 1000V and a family of Nexus 1000 products, which include the 1000V, the distributed virtual switch for vSphere environments. Also, side products such as Nexus 1010 and a virtual security gateway, a virtual firewall for the Nexus 1000V.
Okay. So you're also managing the virtual security gateway product then as well?
That's correct.
Oh, well, we'll have to invite you back for another go because I've got lots of questions around that product too. But today, let's focus on the Nexus 1000V. So perhaps the best thing to start off with is if I flip between the language of Nexus 1000 and Nexus 1K, listeners, please just excuse me because they're the same thing in my head. But Prashant, perhaps you could give us a bit of a lead in as to what the Nexus 1000 is and how we got to where we are today.
Clearly, virtualization is pretty rampant in data centers. The question then becomes is customers who deploy in data centers physical Nexus devices, Nexus switches, how can they get the same experience as they extend into the virtual environment? And hence came the concept of the Nexus 1000V, which is to enable the network teams to have the same operational experience, same feature experience, be able to deploy the same advanced features that they're used to deploying mm-hmm. in the data center with physical Nexus switches, such as the Nexus 7K, the Nexus 5K, 2K,
mm-hmm.
and now be able to apply the same network policies, controls, visibility, QoS, security, to virtual machines in the hypervisor, having residing as a hypervisor switch in the form of the Nexus 1000V.
I guess one of the things that people should realize is that the Nexus 1000, even though it's a software device, actually uses the iOS CLI, the one that we know and are familiar with for years.
Nexus CLI, Greg, sorry.
Oh, okay, well, NXOS then.
Yeah.
Yes.
it's important to realize because...
They are slightly different.
Yes, but it's also important to realize it's the same CLIs we're approximately comfortable or have been configuring, because otherwise people have been using the vCenter vSwitch configuration to configure the networking inside of VMware. And that Nexus one of the features of Nexus 1000 is this CLI, which we're all familiar with.
Oh, by the way, Greg, for me, this is one of the major advantages, because instead of doing click, 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 now I'm done. You go conft, interface something or port profile, and you configure it, and you can cut and paste, and you can save them, you can diff it.
And you can use all your existing management mechanisms.
Exactly. And you can use SSH to connect to it.
There's a lot to be said for SSH.
That was the fundamental sort of premise. And then the challenge, of course, was how do we bring this form factor? Essentially, what we are doing is bringing networking principles to a virtualized hypervisor environment. If we were to do that, then how does the switch become, you know, virtualization aware? In other words, you know, server team is instantiating VMs at a moment's notice. They move the VMs at will. So VMs can move programmatically through capabilities such as DRS in vSphere. And so how does one enable dynamic instantiation of network policies, ability to have the network controls invariant or transparent to mobility events, and be able to ensure the segregation of duties, right? Many of our customers have network teams who are responsible for managing the networks, both physical and non-virtual. They have server teams who have their own workflows and processes. And so how do we ensure the segregation of duties, yet the server team sees no disruption to the way they manage their infrastructure? Mm-hmm. And so these were kind of the key requirements that we placed at the architectural level when we built the 1000V. And what we then did was, you know, as we extended this to virtual services, such as virtual WAS for WAN optimization, or virtual security gateway for providing security to virtualized and cloud environment, is to extend these principles to these products as well. So kind of build once architecturally and leverage it, utilize it multiple times across these form factors so that we don't reinvent the wheel once. We take benefit of the architectural principles that are embedded from day one.
Just to sort of drill into some detail there, the Nexus 7, Nexus 1K consists of one physical component, which is a server, usually a Nexus 1010, which is a rebadged UCS box, isn't it? It has like
Not
a supervisor
really.
Line card architecture, doesn't it?
Right. Yeah. So perhaps I can describe how the architecture is built for the 1000V. So if we go back to a modular switch, like let's say a Nexus 7K, the three canonical components that a modular switch consists of are supervisors, you know, typically pair of supervisors for high availability, a whole bunch of line cards, right? Nexus 18-slot chassis would consist of 16 line cards where you have Ethernet ports and servers can connect to these Ethernet ports. The third canonical component is the backplane or the fabric, which enables the supervisors and the line cards to interact with each other. This is a tightly coupled hardware architecture. A network administrator would simply, as earlier was pointed out, would, you know, for example, SSH into the supervisor module of a Nexus switch and then configure the switch using the CLI, the NXOS CLI. Now, the question then becomes is how do we take this architecture and map it to a virtualized environment, make it fully software? So what we did was the following. We took the supervisor modules and made them virtual appliances. And you have a pair of them. We call them virtual supervisor module. Mm-hmm. Can be deployed in active standby pair. And these are just virtual appliances, can be deployed on any virtualized server, typically on any ESX server. Then we took the line cards, the second canonical component of a switch, physical switch. We took the line cards and we embedded that line card functionality into the hypervisor itself, into the kernel of the hypervisor. This is the joint relationship between Cisco and VMware that was forged at the technical level where the two teams interacted. And Cisco being, you know, offering physical switches that provide distributed switching as part of the modular family of switches, brought the distributed switching expertise with VMware's virtualization expertise. Combination of that, out popped the distributed virtual switch API.
Right. And that was jointly developed with VMware. So it's very much a joint thing. It's not Cisco developing something. These are APIs that VMware has published and made available to all networking vendors. Is that right?
That I am not entirely clear, but certainly, you know, it is the DBS API that the Nexus 1000V leverages to be resident in the Sphere hypervisor. And that is the line card or the data plane, which is where switching occurs and the data plane features are applied.
Right.
Okay. And we call that a virtual Ethernet module. This is where we have virtual Ethernet ports. A virtual machine with a virtual NIC connects to the virtual Ethernet port of the virtual Ethernet module. There you go for, you know, having a whole bunch of terms with the virtual prepended to it.
The three, you virtualized all of that then.
So the Nexus 1010 is just a x86 platform on which you can run virtual machines, including VSM, right?
That is correct. And Ivan, if I may, perhaps if I can just complete the third piece of the architecture.
Sure. Sorry.
And then we can talk about the 1010 and its role in this architecture. So we talked about the two components, the supervisor modules, which are purely virtual appliances. This is where the network team would interact to configure the Nexus 1000V. We have the line cards, virtual Ethernet modules, or VEMs, which sit in the ESX hypervisor in the host. So we have one line card per host, and you can have number of line cards, up to 64, to build a single 1000V. And there's a third component, which is how does VSM and the VEMs interact with each other? And there is no fabric per se. There is no backplane. So we leverage network as our backplane and allow both the capabilities, a layer 2 connectivity between the VSM and the VEMs, or layer 3, where each VEM can have an IP address, and the VSM would, you know, interact with the VEMs using that IP address, set of IP addresses over a layer 3 network. And this makes up a one complete N1K, or a Nexus 1000V. You can have multiple 1000Vs under a vCenter. So if you had, for example, a 500-host data center, and if you use, you know, every 50 hosts, you use one N1K, then with 10 1000Vs, you've covered the entire data center.
So that's the architecture of it coming together. You've got the virtual supervisor, which acts as a configuration central point, or I visualize it as a supervisor module in a 6500. The 1000V agents, which I think of as line cards in the 6500, and they're actually in the VMware server, or the vSphere as it's called now, and it'll be called something else later in the year, vSphere 5 or something. The control plane where the supervisor and the blades communicate with each other. So it's not dissimilar to a chassis-based switch at a management level, but at a control level it's very different, isn't it? There's no constant communication going backwards and forwards.
Well, there is communication. So if I may say, in terms of the networking planes, the supervisor module manages management plane and the control plane owner, and the line card or the VEMs are, you know, doing the data plane processing. So when there is a control plane interaction that occurs, the line cards and the supervisors talk to each other, as well as all of the management and the configurations interactions. However, all of the switching occurs in the line cards. There is no interactions needed in order to switch packets. The VEMs do MAC learning. It's a standard Ethernet switch and 802.1Q compliant. There's nothing proprietary about it. All the packets are handled by the VEM for all of the data plane processing in the hypervisor.
Greg, you know, in terms of the architectures we like to talk about, it's slightly more loosely coupled than Borg.
Yes.
That's a great way to put it. It is loosely coupled.
Yeah, because in Borg architecture, MAC address learning would be done by the control plane mm-hmm. and distributed.
Yes.
Whereas here, each VM does its own MAC address learning, and they don't exchange that information between themselves. However, the control packets like CDP packets or IGMP snooping, it has to go to the VSM to be processed.
Right. So not often.
Exactly.
The bulk of the traffic stays local. It's only exceptional circumstances around that. Okay.
Yeah, it's really just the control plane traffic.
Right. We talk about the virtual Ethernet modules having port profiles. Now, what's a port profile and how does that work? I'm not familiar with that term.
One of the challenges, right, I kind of outlined three challenges. One was for the server team to be able to instantiate VMs on the fly, and the network needs to be provisioned on the fly. And so how do we accomplish that when we have the network team and the server team, you know, managing the infrastructure? And so we came up with the concept of port profile, which is a way for the network team. It's essentially a network configuration template for network policies. So the network team would go to the VSM, the supervisor module, and create these configuration templates, which we call port profile, to provision a port or a group of ports. Once this configuration is created, let's say you have a green port profile, yellow, purple, red, different kinds of port profiles for different kinds of workloads. Once they're created, the VSM, the supervisor module, programmatically communicates this information, essentially the names of the port profile, to vCenter. And they show up in vCenter, exactly the same place where you would configure, you know, network policies. And so now the server team is able to simply go to the same familiar place in vCenter and apply these policies as they would for a native hypervisor switch. However, the effect of this is now that these policies are applied on the 1000V, and it has all of the advanced capabilities, such as QoS and others that I talked about, that get applied to the 1000V switch. So with port profiles, we are able to maintain segregation of duties. The network team is able to create the policies, manage all of the policies, edit them, and so on.
So things like VLAN membership, QoS profiles.
Exactly. All the configurations.
You say these ports can have this inheritance. They can inherit these parameters.
Exactly.
And then the server guys can go off and do whatever they like inside the box. So you say this VMware server can have VLAN 100, 101, 102, 103. The server guys can then move that wherever they want it to be. And that's what a port profile is.
Right. Port profile is simply a collection of these policies. So policies can include transport policies such as VLANs and others, QoS policies, security policies. These are all ACLs. Same familiar interface that that one would have interacting with a physical switch is available on the virtual switch. Except now we package these configurations as a template in the form of a port profile.
Okay.
And that port profile is mobile. If the virtual machine gets to be motioned elsewhere, that port profile goes along with it. Is that about right?
And that's an excellent point, right? So that's the second principle, which is the server team can move VMs at will, or they may get moved through DRS. And so these port profiles can be thought of as being bound to the virtual machine. So if the virtual machine moves from one server to another, from one rack to another, potentially from one data center to another, that the port profile remains bound to that VM, and all of the network policies therefore remain invariant to mobility events.
Ethan, you see the port profiles are translated into port groups in vCenter. So what you create is a port profile on the Nexus 1000V appears as a port group in vCenter. It looks like any other port group on a distributed switch to the server admins.
Sure, yeah.
Of course, then the network vMotion, where the port state goes with the VM, works exactly the same as it would with the virtual distributed switch.
I think I got that.
Yep.
In the switches, or in the Nexus product range, the 1000, 2000, 5000, 7000, we see a lot of talk about VNLink as a technology. And it's Cisco's tagging mechanism so that you can create pseudo backlink, backtown connections, or dynamic configuration mechanisms between switches. But we've also got a standard coming down the pipe, which is the 802.1 QBG and 802.1 QBH. one of these days the IEEE will let the moths fly up when they actually announce it as somewhere nearing completion, and we'll all go, hey, they did something. How does VNLink and 802.1 QBG, QBH compare? Are they certainly look like similar technologies on the outside.
There are two approaches to providing, I guess there are three approaches to providing networking principles or enabling networking principles for virtualized environments. So one, we talked about taking the network to the hypervisor in the form of a virtual switch or distributed virtual switch, 1000V being a DVS. Second approach is to bring the packets, the virtual machine packets, out to the external world and be processed by the physical network. These are two fundamental approaches. And there are different use cases for customers to deploy, you know, one versus the other. And some customers deploy both of them depending on the use case. Now, in the second approach, where the packets from the virtual machines are sent to the external switch, sometimes referred to as the controlling bridge, which provides, you know, the switching functionality. One approach in that is to add a tag that identifies the VM and leverage that tag as a way to define the VM or have that identity of the VM be communicated to the external switch and then apply the switching principles. This is standardized in the QBH working group. I believe, called the port extension working group.
Yeah, I thought that QBH didn't use a tag. They actually used an out-of-band signaling mechanism to signal
state. No, it's a tag.
It is a tag?
It's a special header that they insert in front of the regular payload, and it has a tag in there.
But it's a local tag. It doesn't get propagated outside of the switch in the server.
No, it's between the NIC and the switch.
That's right.
So, right.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's a whole bunch of out-of-band signaling that goes with it to signal state between the server-side configuration and the...
No, not in QBH. The QBH has a very simple mechanism.
Yeah.
The extender just tells the controlling bridge, I have this many ports. I need this many tags.
Yeah.
It gets the tags, attaches them to the ports, and then it's up to the controlling bridge what it configures.
There is one additional capability, which is ability to extend the ports, right? So one is to be able to have the virtual machine traffic be processed for network policies. Additionally, one is able to have a multi-layer topology where ports can be extended, policies can be configured at a central point. So you can have a two- or three-tier architecture, for example. You have a controlling bridge, port extender, which does the fan-out of the ports, and then servers with NICs that speak QBH and that allow, you know, instantiate the tag based on the VM identity. So this way, one is able to aggregate a large number of ports across many, many servers, which each server having many VMs.
Yeah,
and so a large number of VMs can be managed from a network perspective through fewer number of controlling bridges, and it operationally simplifies the environment.
Now, VNLink is Cisco's current pre-standard implementation.
VNTag is the pre-standard implementation of this capability.
Okay, so VNLink is something different. It's switch-to-switch version of the same thing.
I think VNLink is it describes as it leverages an ability to apply port profile, ability to provide mobility transparent operations, provide that segregation across network and server teams. VNLink is a set of characteristics, a component of which is the VNTag, and hence we often refer to it as hardware VNLink, or more recently, you know, simplifying it using leveraging the FEX terminology. And calling this is a FEX for virtual machines, and hence VMFEX.
Greg, from a more technical perspective.
Okay.
The problem is that there is a disconnect between the vSwitch in the hypervisor and the virtual physical NICs that Cisco can create with Palo NIC. Because the vSwitch doesn't know what to do with them. Mm-hmm. Cisco needs a very complex mechanism that goes through vCenter. And that's the whole point of the VN link. An ESX host activates a new port for a new virtual machine.
Yep.
Tells vCenter what it's doing.
Yep.
Then the UCS manager pulls the information down from the vCenter, and the UCS manager configures the Palo NIC,
yep,
and it configures the 6100 to provision the, you know, the other side of the link.
Yeah, the physical side.
Yeah, and then it needs a VM in the ESX host that looks like a switch but isn't a switch.
To present because, that to the virtual instance.
Yeah, because that VM links the port on the VM,
yep,
with the logical physical NIC.
And the virtual whiteboard here is just... It's
yeah, I know. It's all crowded.
There's much hand-waving going on right about this point. This is where the podcast starts to get a little gnarly. Let's presume that we all know that. Prashant, I want to ask you about the status of the standardization effort. Cisco's got a pre-standard, effectively the VM, you know, these things that we're talking about here, the VMFEX, the VMLink, and the VNTag, all come together to sort of create functionality that parallels, as I understand it, 802.1 QBG and H. So what's the status of the IEEE standards, and how does Cisco perceive those standards in the long term? Are you going to follow them and go with them, or are you supporting them, Prashant?
Well, Cisco, you know, the history of the company has been to support standards, right? Whether it's ITF standards, IEEE standards. And so oftentimes Cisco Innovates includes these capabilities as pre-standards in Cisco products and then takes them to standards bodies for standardization. So that DNA and, you know, historical perspective that we have and experience that we have will continue as we march forwards. At the end of the day, it is all about business reasons and, you know, ROI.
Yeah.
Clearly, VNLink or VNTag is implemented, and we'll implement other standards as they're, you know, they become standards, and there is a market traction for those capabilities.
Great. Okay, so that means you'll, depending on what the market does, so if the IEEE ever gets it out the door and people start to supporting it, so will you.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, John Chambers says, right, we have no technology religion, so so we will be driven by customers and the business case. As product managers, we are always driven by having a sound business case where we can make product investments.
So following on from that, hey, Hewlett-Packard, who obviously is a competitor in the space, they're looking very closely at VEPA and VEB as their technology. How does VEPA differ from what Cisco's doing in their space between the two?
VEPA or QBG, yeah, really focuses on, again, bringing the packets out from the hypervisor into the controlling bridge. One of the approaches that had been talked about in QBG was to do this without having a tag. So, you know, have a tagless way to provide switching capabilities in the controlling bridge for virtual machines. So that's how that activity has started. Now, in QBG, as I understand it, there's also an optional capability where a tag can be assigned. I believe it's called the multi-channel tag.
Is the S component, yeah.
Or the S component. So which means that, you know, there are benefits to having a tag, and hence it has been included as part of the QBG that the tagless may, you know, can performance and behavior can be enhanced to make it like true switching and networking capabilities and behavior for unicast, multicast, and everything else. Mm-hmm. And hence, the tag has been introduced.
Sorry to interrupt. They didn't solve the multicasting with the tag. I know you have solved that with QBH. So you can replicate multicasts. They can't do
right. That
with the S component. The S component just provides logical links over one physical link, like your logical NICs. That's all it does, nothing more.
Perfect. And I think, thank you for that observation. Because, so, you know, there are different levels, I guess, one can achieve, do some basic switching. But if you want efficiency with multicast and other things, you know, even when a tag is added, it's not guaranteed that you can get that. In the case of the port extension and the QBH, all of that has been taken care of from the beginning. And it's not a theory anymore, right? We have large number of deployments, customer deployments, where Fex and the VM Fex technology has been deployed in production today.
On the other hand, what they did is they reused the queue-in-queue encapsulation. So you can implement QBG with the existing chipsets, whereas QBH probably needs a different chipset.
So that's a very good point. It's, I had, at least in my mind, I had that question. Is it possible to take an existing implementation and change its behavior?
Yes.
Because typically in ASICs, you know, I did a couple of years of ASIC designs, and we, you know, in those days, you try to be very efficient. And so when you optimize all of the ASIC components, you try to, you know, optimize it for the behavior that you have. And so any flexibility you add of any future things that is unknown is, you know, adds to inefficiencies. So at least we were trained to be very efficient in terms of, you know, in terms of the number of gates and latency and so on. And so the behavior that you that is specified is implemented exactly, but not much outside. And so, but certainly that's kind of the question that I had in my mind.
Well, at least the argument, well, I understand exactly what you're saying. But the argument of the QBG proponents is that because all the existing hardware already supports Q&Q, they think they will be able to run this on existing hardware.
Okay, and it would be good to get a proof point of that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Certainly, it makes sense for tagless to presume that, you know, when you are forwarding or switching based on the source MAC address and VLAN information, that behavior, you know, would, since it does not require hardware component, that through firmware upgrade one could achieve it. Although the number of switches that support that is very few. So far, I think it's only one or two or three switches that support that. So, but for the tag, the multi-channel or the S tag, I didn't realize that, or I don't know yet whether it can support existing switches or existing Q&Q or that capability supports that.
Well, it is existing Q&Q. So if you were able to process individual packets on a Q&Q trunk in your switch before, then you will be able to process QBG packets.
With the S tag, you're saying?
Yes. Okay. Without the S tag, it's just the control plane functionality, so it's all in software.
Okay. Yeah, and it would be good to get a proof point of, shipping.
I've heard that.
Okay.
Well, that's the other problem with QBG, because you also need the hypervisor side of it, and it doesn't exist yet.
Right, and that's also a very good point, right? There is a relay function that is needed, and I don't know that it is part of the standardization activities, but that would be needed, and whether it's going to be per vendor specific or per hypervisor specific.
No, the control plane is standardized. Well, it's being standardized as we speak.
Yeah, I spoke to Paul Condon, and he showed me a working demo a year or so ago that he had running in software and was actually demoing it to us. But I don't think that's a commercial product in the field as such.
No, the problem is that someone needs to implement the hypervisor side of the control plane.
Yes, he had a working hypervisor side that he was using to demo.
Okay, so can we buy it?
No, you can't. That was him.
You see.
He's part of the standards initiative and working for HP in their research labs, and so it was for him to do preliminary work.
Is that part of the specification of QBG?
Yes.
The hypervisor portion?
Yes. The control protocol is specified. Obviously not the implementation, but the control plane protocol is there, yeah.
From Ian Castleman is a little bit more of a practical question. He's saying, I have some Nexus 5000s at the top of the rack, and he's got budget for Nexus 1000.
So his question is, can you deploy Nexus 1000V on a Dell server, and what do you lose by doing that?
Looks like he's got a Dell switch in the middle as well, and he's concerned
the top of chassis switch, the embedded thingy.
Is that enough information, Prashant, or do you want me to read it again?
Yeah, it is enough information. So, you know, sometimes I have heard, you know, in the press, even when talking to customers, there is this misconception that 1000V, you know, is in some ways very unique and requires very specific components in order for it to operate. Frankly, 1000V is a standards-based switch, a .1Q switch. It's a .1Q bridge. And so it can reside in any – today it works on ESX hypervisor, and it can reside in any server that runs ESX vSphere 4.0, 4.1, and the upcoming release will also support vSphere 5. It also works with vCloud Director. Basically adheres to the hardware compatibility matrix, the HCL, that VMware publishes. So it can sit in any server, including UCS, and it can connect to any .1Q stream switch upstream.
Yeah, so what you're saying is that the Nexus 1000V software agent that sits in the server is purely a software device that drives the NIC. It doesn't need to be integrated with the – it doesn't do any secret squirrel signaling between the server and the switch. Or it's just between the Nexus 1000 supervisor and the Nexus blades.
Right. So the component that we describe is the 1000V, the supervisor module and the line card, the VEM. It does talk to vCenter, you know, the VM management station, to interact with the virtualized environment. But beyond that, it is a standards-based switch.
Right. So it does...
As long as the device is dealing with .1Q tagged frame, it's going to be okay. You could say the same thing for an HPC class blade center with a virtual connect module into it.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think Ian's in good shape then.
Yeah, he can certainly push ahead with that. So but what he has is a Cisco IOS type or Nexus switch CLI inside his VMware servers, configuring the NICs that go into the VMware guest OSs and appears in vCenter. And then it just connects to the Dell switches as normal. And then he can have, you know, it's just that bit there is the inside the VM, the vSphere is a Cisco Nexus switch. Everything else is just another switch. I think that answers his question. We have another question. Ivan's got some questions here around doing QoS in the Nexus 1000. First question that he lit up was, does it do policing or does it do shaping on VM NICs in the Nexus 1000?
Nexus 1000 supports, you know, both marking and policing. And recently in the 1.4 release, we introduced queuing.
So the question was really because VMware is talking about rate limiting on per VM basis, and they call it shaping. You are more precise, maybe, and you call it policing.
Now, I'm using the terminologies that we use in traditional switching.
The reason I'm asking is because with shaping, you are delaying packets. With policing, you're dropping them. And for TCP sessions, shaping is way better.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I asked this question.
Right. So you can do policing or queuing. Queuing allows you to buffer the packets and then apply, you know, we leverage the class-based weighted fair queuing mechanism, which is what is implemented in hardware ASICs. In the switches, that's implemented in software, in the VEM. And so one gets the same behavior of queuing components across both the physical and the virtual infrastructure.
Okay, the next question is queuing, now that you mention it. Today, you can do only class of service or VMware traffic type-based queuing. Are there any plans to add, you know, all the queuing mechanisms that we are used to on the regular switches, like access list-based queuing or QoS group-based queuing?
The queuing capabilities that was recently introduced leverages the QoS, you know, modular CLI for configuration. It leverages the same capabilities that we have. You can apply queuing and marking based on a flow-level granularity. So you would classify it based on the phi tuple, like leveraging an ACL or classification policy, and then do apply the queuing QoS policies, marketing, policing, and queuing.
I just think that QoS is avoiding the real issue of just upgrading to 40 gig, surely.
You always have an option to over-provision, but then, you know, we always run into this issue where, you know, you have over-provisioning for some duration of time, and then you end up, you know, getting to over-subscription when the QoS needs to kick in.
Yeah, I know. You don't have to justify it to me. It's just I've sat in meetings recently arguing over QoS policies, and I've walked out of meetings muttering, I think I'll just put more bandwidth in just for my own sanity.
Oh, by the way.
So QoS policies are applied at flow-level granularity, right? So which is what we do in physical.
Perfect. By the way, Greg, I just got exactly the same comment yesterday when I was talking about VMware and QoS.
Right.
Someone said, you know what, it's cheaper to buy more bandwidth than to play with QoS policies.
Yes, and I would agree with that. Conceptually, it's just easier to strap another 10 gig on and live with it, in my view.
Yeah, it's also cheaper because that's a one-time investment versus playing with that thing every day.
Yes, and my sanity is worth much less. Much more, sorry. It's worth much more than another 10-gig port. I was just wondering about that. We also got another message in from John McManus saying, who do you think should manage the 1000V? Should it be a server engineer doing the configuration, or should it be a network engineer?
I think it's really the choice that the infrastructure operations team makes. What we have seen is typically with 1000V, it is the network team who has already familiarity with the CLI on NXOS or iOS-like CLI, and they're able to hence manage the virtual switch. The server team is not used to doing it using, you know, NXOS CLI, so it tends to be tricky for them. So typically we see the network team managing it. And this is all about managing the policies, right? And once the policies are applied, then the operations from the server team perspective remains, pretty much hands-off.
And one last point here, which is a point that – Ethan, do you want to read this one? This is your – looks like something you wanted to put together.
Well, this is kind of a conceptual question. You know, when you come from the networking world where everything's physical and you've got a piece of hardware that's got dedicated ASICs in it that does all your frame forwarding, now you're moving – you're switching over into this virtual switch, like vSwitch does and everything. That's the brave new world. What is there that is making sure frames are always going to get forwarded, that you've got enough of the bare metal resources on that virtualized environment to make sure that you can push frames out the door all the time?
That's a very interesting question, and it may imply, you know, knowledge of the hypervisor and how the hypervisor is prioritizing and scheduling processing across
the 1000. Yeah, so is the 1000V doing that, or are we relying on VMware and the hypervisor to really do that?
No, it's 1000V doing that.
Well, the 1000V is processing packets, but the CPU resource management is essentially done by through the hypervisor layer. And a resource, a computing resource, which is in the hypervisor, which is the DBS, leverages those resources to forward packets, switch and forward packets.
Yeah, and Ethan, don't forget that this thing runs within the kernel mode. So it's probably higher priority than the user VM processes.
Yes, there'd really be no chance, or you'd assume there'd be no chance that some process that's running away either with the hypervisor or virtual machines running on top are going to monopolize resources such that the 1000V all of a sudden is dropping packets because it doesn't have the ability to forward anymore. That shouldn't really ever happen in a virtualized switch.
It shouldn't ever happen.
Yeah.
And the APIs that VMware has exposed for this function would be the ultimate arbiter of that. And they wouldn't expose networking APIs without taking that into account inside of their kernel scheduling algorithms.
The question that was earlier mentioned, you know, one thing in regards to if someone wants to get a look and feel, like, for example, server team or someone who is new to virtual networking, they want to, you know, get to know what it is. We have a very interesting opportunity, we have something called a Cloud Lab, cloudlab.cisco.com, where if you have a CCO ID and a Cisco sponsor, then you can get access to Cloud Labs and, you know, go through hands-on training, hands-on labs on the 1000V installation, configurations of different use cases, including virtual security gateway and firewall capabilities. All of that's available online through the Cloud Lab offering.
Cool. We might, since this show's run a bit longer than I might have otherwise expected, we might take the virtual security gateway into another show in a couple of months, if that's all right with you, Prashant.
Absolutely. If I may, I wanted to kind of mention one item
please
in regards to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have done with virtual security, we wanted to, you know, make it a very efficient and performant-oriented way to enable virtual security or virtual services onto a virtual networking infrastructure. And so what we have embedded is intelligence that we call VPath, or Virtual Service Data Path, which allows services to be inserted on the network fabric. So they are, you know, they have visibility to at the network layer across the entire network versus just at the hypervisor layer. And so one can deploy these instances across multiple hosts. You know, one does not have to do it on a per-host basis. And we have an ability to do cut-through processing right in VPath. So we're leveraging the fact that, you know, services require, in order for them to be deployed efficiently and operate in a performant-oriented manner in this software world, what we are doing is these unique coupling where some intelligence can be added into the virtual fabric in order to, you know, provide tremendous benefit to services that can ride on top of it. And we can have, you know, I'd be very happy to to have a detailed conversation on this and then to also talk about the virtual security gateway.
No, I think it deserves a show in its own right because it actually has some architectural implications that I'm quite excited by in terms of data center design by shifting the security down to the server instead of having it clustered somewhere else in the data center. Ivan, have you got any more questions for Prashant?
No.
No? Ethan,
I'm good.
Going twice. So, shall we thank Prashant for coming on to Packet Pushers today? I look forward to you coming back in a couple of months to talk about Security Gateway. So, thank you very much, Prashant.
Thank you all. Looking forward to it.
And that's it for the show this week, and thanks for listening to Packet Pushers. We should be back again in a week or so. Make sure you come back. I'd like to thank Ethan for joining us this week, and what fun have you got packed in your bag for the next week or so?
You know, I keep talking about firewall audits. I have one more that I've just desperately got to get done. And after a while, you stare at rules and objects and ARP caches and doing ICMP, and you just, I don't want to do this anymore.
Is it the checkpoint?
No, actually, it's a really old PIX I've just got to migrate off of. But the rule base is so very old that it just needs a – thankfully, there's not that many objects in it. It's a small little firewall. It's just got to get done, and it's a few hours of work. So that's there, and turning up some MPLS circuits and so on. You know, good stuff, making the network faster, stronger, better.
Even better. And Ivan, thank you for coming on the show again. Anything exciting in your world?
No, I just tried to relax a bit from all the virtualization stuff I was doing for the last month or so.
Yeah, because just remember, when it's virtual, it's not real, so you just made it all up.
Ah, that's it. That explains a lot of things. Thank you.
I get positively reassured by that whole idea. I just made it. And, of course, I'm Greg Farrow, and you can find me at etherealmind.com or on the Twitter at etherealmind. We'd love to hear your feedback about today's show, so send an email to packetpushers@gmail.com and let us know what you are thinking. Check out the podcast website at packetpushers.net and leave comments, positive, negative, friendly, unfriendly. We take criticism generally pretty well, or sometimes not so much, but I'm getting better at it. And don't forget to follow us on the Twitter as @packetpushers. And as always, remember that too much networking would never be enough.